Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll talk with the documentary filmmaker Luke Heikkilä about his recent trip to Afghanistan, and we'll examine the future of our VFW post with the incoming state commander. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Minnesota employers are coming to me and saying, "How do I hire one of your veterans?" These employers know that my returning citizen soldiers and airmen, your friends and neighbors, are highly trained, well-educated, and experienced leaders. These veterans know how to be part of a team. They perform under pressure, they are conscious of health and safety standards, and they have values like honor and respect. To these employers that want to hire today's veterans, I first say thank you. Then I say, visit positivelyminnesota.com/veterans. More than 20% of our returning service members need employment. They come home after working nearly 365 days straight. They need a breather, but then they need a new purpose, a new mission, a new job. Our citizen soldiers are posting their resumes online at minnesotaworks.com. And they're connected with Minnesota Workforce Centers throughout the state. Your chance to hire a leader starts by visiting positivelyminnesota.com/veterans.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Born and raised in Minnesota, Luke Heikkilä began working at Twin Cities Public Television straight out of college. For the past nearly 10 years, he's been producing content airing locally on TPT and TPT's Minnesota Channel. Although he produces stories ranging in focus from healthcare to education to history, since 2006, he has been the station's go-to producer for stories relating to military affairs and reintegration. It was in 2006, while his brother-in-law was deployed with the Minnesota National Guard in Iraq, that he saw firsthand what a deployment does to the family left behind. This deep-seated personal interest pegged him as a member of the production team on Welcome Home Minnesota, a special edition of Almanac that looked at how to help soldiers reintegrate after their 18-month deployment. In 2008 and 2009, Heikkilä again connected with the Minnesota National Guard and produced Iraq and Back, Minnesotan Stories. Production for this documentary sent him to Basra, Iraq, to interview and follow five soldiers as they performed duties related to their deployment. Luke also produced Homes for Heroes with Anna Long at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. In April of 2012, Luke Heikkilä traveled to Afghanistan to report on the efforts being made by the ADT in Zabul. Luke, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Just hours off the plane, you look like you could maybe use a nap in the next few hours. How was that trip?
It was, you know, it's a trip of a lifetime for a civilian to go to Afghanistan and to be able to see what I saw and to be able to report back to our viewers what I saw. Was really, you know, I don't know if I've really digested what an honor it was. I've been back in the country now for about 16 hours, and I'm sort of mulling over everything that I saw while I was there.
Luke, we had you on the show a few months ago, and I've talked to you in between. You spent a lot of time planning and packing and anticipating this trip to go over and visit Colonel Allness and the Minnesota National Guard's ag development team. How was the build up to it compared to actually arriving in Afghanistan?
You know, the planning process was it was tough. I guess the project was green lit back in October, so I had about 6 months to get everything in order. 6 months to pull together, you know, Afghanistan visa, had to get my orders through ISA, the ISAF, the media team there. Everyone needs to know that there's a media member in Afghanistan. There's a lot of paperwork to fill out. And then there are a lot of well wishes, a lot of concern. The 6 months was actually pretty trying. You know, I tell people I was going to Afghanistan and They said, "Oh, you know, that's not, are you going to be okay? That sounds dangerous." And I sort of had a canned response that, "Oh, I'm going to a safe place. No big deal. No worries." In all honesty, I can now report that there really aren't safe places in Afghanistan. And, you know, I started to believe my own lie, I guess, while I was preparing for this. It didn't take long for me to be in country to realize that our Minnesota National Guard, the Mississippi National Guard, the National Guard troops who are serving in Zabul Province are in a war zone every day, and they're living with that. So it was eye-opening to get there and see what it is that our National Guard troops are going through.
So you're pretty happy to be reunited with your helmet and your flak vest that you sent over.
Yeah, I had to, you know, to get to Afghanistan, I flew from Minneapolis to Atlanta, Atlanta to Dubai and the United Arab Emirates. They are sort of, they're tough. They don't want vests. They don't want Kevlar coming through their ports. And I guess I understand why. They're sort of Switzerland. They've got a lot to lose if they get, connected with any of these efforts. So I had to get my vest and my Kevlar helmet to Afghanistan ahead of time, shipped it to Colonel Alness, and he had it there waiting for me in Kandahar, and I was happy to see that.
We're speaking with Luke Heikkila from Twin Cities Public Television about his recent trip to visit the Minnesota National Guard's agribusiness development team in Afghanistan on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Luke, you left here, you figured out the packing, how much clothes you could bring, so forth. How long did it take you to get from Minneapolis to Kandahar?
It takes a couple of days. The flight from Atlanta to Dubai is 16 hours, and that's the longest flight I've ever been on. It's a tough go. And then from Dubai to Kandahar, it's just a short little hop, skip, and a jump. It's about a two-hour flight to get, you know, when you land at Kandahar, you are at the Kandahar airfield. Which is a large base. Half the airport is military, the other half is civilian. I met my military escorts at the civilian side of the airport. I was very happy to see a couple of guys in camouflage waiting for me. I knew that I had made it and that that things were going to be okay. From that point on, I was their property from that point on.
Now, Luke, your mission was to embed with the Minnesota National Guard and to watch them on their mission to help the Afghan farmers. And you brought along camera equipment and so forth. How many hours did you shoot?
You know, I haven't strung it all together yet. I would guess I've got between, you know, maybe 14 and 18 hours of content to whittle down to 26 minutes and 40 seconds. I'm going to be producing a half-hour standalone documentary out of this, so I'll have ample footage to be able to cherry-pick the best of the best.
And I understand from following you on the internet that Kandahar was a little assault to your senses.
Yeah, the Kandahar Airfield CAF is a pretty atrocious place. There's a lot of soldiers who come through there. It's sort of a transient camp. Soldiers get there and then they disperse to other areas within Afghanistan from that point. And it's hot, it's dusty. They've got a sewage treatment plant right in the middle of the base. It doesn't smell all that good.
Great location.
Yeah, perfect. I believe the base has actually expanded over the course of years, and so their intent wasn't to put the sewer treatment plant right in the middle, but that's where it is right now, and you know which way the wind is blowing pretty quickly when you step outside.
And that was your jumping off place, and did you go to FOB Apache from there, forward operating base?
Yeah, from Kandahar, we took a helicopter to FOB Apache, and that is where the command team is set up in Zabul Province. That's where Colonel Alness and his lieutenant colonels are, and that's sort of the operation center for the ADT.
Now, they knew you were coming, and you'd been in contact with them quite a bit before you went over.
Yeah, I had regular contact with Lieutenant Davin Fisher, who is the public affairs officer in Zabul right now, and he was my go-to guy. He's my liaison. Gave me a lot of information before I got there, and once I got there, never really left his side. He got me from point A to point B to point C and beyond.
So he had a very elaborate plan on where to take you and what to show you and how to demonstrate what the ADT team was doing.
He did. He knew that he was going to have me there for 2 weeks, and he filled up my time very well. I was able to go out on numerous missions. I was able to see the ADT at work. I was able to see how they're working with Afghan government officials to be able to better help Afghan farmers.
Luke, we're going to take a break in a minute here. When we come back, we'll talk about the actual mission. But what was the geography like? What was it like to be in Afghanistan? I read about dirt and rocks and so forth, but what was it like being there?
You know, it was more austere than I thought it was going to be. I was on four bases while I was there. Each one seemed to get a little bit smaller, with fewer and fewer amenities. So I guess, you know, if I was surprised by, what the soldiers have in place. FOB Viper is a very small FOB in which there are 11 National Guard soldiers there, a few from Minnesota, security forces from the Mississippi National Guard. They've got a makeshift weight room. You know, they're lifting anything heavy, not necessarily weights, but they have gone and welded weights together to provide them with what they need to stay physically fit. There's just not a lot of amenities set up in a lot of the places that our guard troops are serving right now.
Well, unfortunately, when we send our military around the world, sometimes they have to make themselves at home in the desert and the mountains and the rocks and the dirt.
And they are, they're resourceful. They are making the best of the situation that they have. The plywood walls go up, the shelves are built, the desks are built. They start cooking for themselves in some places. They make themselves at home pretty much wherever they are.
They make the best of maybe a bad situation.
That's true.
And we got to take a break in just a minute. What kind of shape was Colonel Allis and all of our Minnesota National Guard troops in?
They were good. They've got the energy levels are up. They see the mission that they're accomplishing as something that's necessary, that's needed. The spirits are high. I'd be lying if I said they weren't tired. But you know, you can see the wear and tear in a few more wrinkles around their eyes. They're tanner than they were when they got there, probably. But they seem to be doing well.
We're speaking with Luke Heikkilä from Twin Cities Public Television about his recent trip to Afghanistan to visit with the Minnesota National Guard's Ag Development Team. When we come back, we'll talk about that mission on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we're speaking with Luke Heikkilä from Twin Cities Public Television about his recent trip to Afghanistan to embed with the Minnesota National Guard's Agribusiness Development Team. Luke, I'm curious about connectivity. When you were in Afghanistan, did you have access to telephone? I know that you wrote on the internet about the morale, wellness, and recreation tents. Were you able to stay in touch?
You know, I was able to stay in touch, and that is something that it's changed over the years. You know, I was just recently speaking with a Vietnam veteran, and they relied on letters. They relied on the U.S. Postal Service. Now with Iraq and Afghanistan, soldiers are able to jump online. They're able to have access to the internet. The MWR tents, the morale, wellness, and recreation tents are hooked up with computers, and soldiers are able to call, connect, Skype with loved ones back home. And that was sort of my lifeline. That was how I was able to stay in contact with my friends and family. I kept a blog while I was there. That's at tpt.org/Afghanistan. And that was my way to be able to, you know, communicate with you, communicate with friends and family. So I had a lot of fun while I was in those MWR tents, because I was able to catch updates from a lot of people. I was able to stay on Facebook. I was able to do a lot of things. But I couldn't help but notice that the MWR tents aren't always joyful places. Soldiers, while they're deployed, have the war that they're fighting in country. They also have issues that are popping up at home, and while soldiers are on the phone or Skyping with their family back home, I can't help but listen to or hear, not that I was trying to listen to the conversations, but just in the study carrel next to me, there'd be a soldier talking with a girlfriend or a wife at home and dealing with some pretty tough financial situations. And it just, you know, made me appreciate what our troops are doing, and what the spouses and what the family and what the friends of troops are going through at home. It's hard all the way around. There's no easy solution, but while a soldier's away, life keeps on, you know, marching back home, and it's tough to be able to deal with situations when you're 7,000 miles away, whether they're financial situations or whether the toilet's running or whether the garage door is broken. There's just not a lot. It's tough when you take a team member out of the situation and send them away. So soldiers are dealing with a lot, both in country and at home.
Luke, I noticed in one of your internet posts that you observed a telephone with a soldier and his wife, and they're talking about some tough things. And your observation was the life of a soldier is tough, but the life of a spouse of a soldier might be tougher.
Yeah, and after that blog post, there was a very thoughtful comment posted by Lieutenant Devin Fisher's wife to that blog post. And Lieutenant Devin Fisher was my liaison in country, and she said, "Yeah, it's right on. It is a lot of work to be left at home."
Look back to the mission of the Ag Development Team. I noticed in your post that while they're in Zabul Province, our Minnesota National Guard soldiers. We're working with the Afghan DALE, Division of Ag, Irrigation, and Land. Can you tell us how's that relationship going? How's the mission going?
Yeah, well, the DALE is essentially an extension agency. It's a county extension service, a term that listeners may be familiar with. DALE is a group of government officials whose job it is to sort of to help Afghan farmers learn about different crops, learn about different techniques. So the mission of the ADT is to mentor, to be a partner, to help the DALE better learn, to help other Afghans. So, the analogy that I sort of, it's not my analogy, but it's the difference between giving a person a bucket of fish or teaching a person how to fish. And right now, the ADT is that they are teaching Afghans how to fish.
We're speaking with Luke Heikkila from Twin Cities Public Television about his recent trip to Afghanistan to visit with the Minnesota National Guard's Agribusiness Development Team on Minnesota Military Radio. Luke, you were on some walking mounted patrols. You were in the villages. You were observing all of this. I note in one of your internet posts that time and time again, you were truly impressed by the Ag Development Team's poise, organization, and supreme attention to each and every detail. Mission briefings are clear and concise. To this day, when you made the comment, it was no different. Every soldier knew what they were to do and when they were to do it. You were telling me the briefings are very thorough.
They really are. And the ADT is made up of 22 Minnesota National Guard soldiers and 36 soldiers from the Mississippi National Guard, and those Mississippi National Guard soldiers are providing force security for the Minnesota National Guard soldiers. So every mission that the Minnesota National Guard goes on, the first thing of the day is a mission brief, and they learn about how they're going to move, how they're going to get in, how they're going to get out, and what's going to happen in the case of an emergency, where medevac is going to come from, the distance that they need to have, the spacing they need to have as they're on a foot patrol, who's in which vehicle and how they're going to get out of any sticky situation. So it really, it was impressive. These are 26, 27, 28-year-old soldiers with all the poise in the world. And, when they get home, the lessons that they've learned here in the National Guard are really going to, I feel, help them tremendously in their pursuit of civilian employment.
And as usual, I've heard this over and over again, but they're very disciplined. They're very thorough. They know exactly what they're doing at all times.
They really do. They know that they're where they're going to be and how they're going to get from point A to point B to point C and from point C to point B to point A. They've got it really figured out.
And just in your opinion, how's the mission going? You've talked to Colonel Allness. You've talked to the officers. Are they happy with the mission?
They are. They have seen progress. There's a bazaar in the city, in Collet City, in Zabul Province, and Lieutenant Colonel DeGeer is someone that I followed around as we took a foot patrol through that bazaar, and he's able to point out the improvements that have been made just in the short 6 months that they've been there right now. There's a lot of progress being made. They have a lot of work to do. This is they're sort of the halfway point, not just of their mission, but of the entire mission of the ADT. They are the third of five National Guard units who will be making up agribusiness development teams in Zabul Province. So the work that they're doing will pave the way for the next 2 years of ADT missions that are going to be completed by other National Guard units. So they're halfway point right now, and they see that Afghanistan is in a better spot now than it was 10 years ago. It's in a better spot now than it was 5 years ago. It's in a better spot now than it was 6 months ago. So it's really their hope that the work that they're doing is just going to snowball. It's going to build momentum, and 5 years from now, Afghanistan, in their eyes, will be better off than it is now.
Now, Luke, you've got hours and hours of film, and you've got, what, 2 or 3 months to work through that? When are we going to see the results of this trip, and how can our listeners find out about it?
Well, listeners can sort of follow my creative process and the creative process of my colleagues at TPT by going to the webpage tpt.org/Afghanistan. The goal is to have this project wrapped up and completed, ready for air in September, so it'll coincide with the homecoming of the ADT coming back to Minnesota.
Very good. Luke, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts about what you've learned in the last couple of weeks over in Afghanistan with the Minnesota National Guard?
Yeah. You know, every time I work with our Minnesota military, I walk away inspired. This is a group of soldiers serving in Afghanistan right now that they're truly making progress. They're helping Afghanistan rewrite some of their history. To be able to be embedded with the Minnesota National Guard is really, really an inspiring exercise. I walk away, I'm just, fresh off the plane, essentially, and got a lot of thoughts swimming through my head at this point. But really, to see what they're doing and to see how they're going about their mission, it's something that I think Minnesotans can be proud of.
And one last time, where do they go?
You can check it out at tpt.org/Afghanistan.
Luke, thanks for joining us today.
All right, thanks for having me.
This is Luke Heikkilä from Twin Cities Public Television talking about his recent trip to Afghanistan to be embedded with the Minnesota National Guard's agribusiness development team. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase and discuss how the Minnesota Twins will recognize local businesses and employers at Target Field this summer. Last year, a half dozen Beyond the Yellow Ribbon volunteers received a special honor from the Twins. After dozens of volunteers were highlighted during the nomination period, 6 volunteers were selected. Each volunteer was recognized in a separate pregame, on-the-field ceremony, and given 4 tickets to that night's game. This year, the Twins will continue the tradition of recognizing those who support service members and their military families. However, this time around, businesses and employers will be treated to a night out at Target Field. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is now accepting nominations for employers in 2 categories: employers who go above and beyond in support of service members, veterans, and military families, and employers who have made a commitment to hiring veterans. Nominations, in the form of a short story email, will be accepted until mid-May. The winning nominations for each category will receive 4 tickets to separate games and be recognized during a pregame on-the-field ceremony. In addition to 2 employers who will be recognized via the nomination contest, 10 Yellow Ribbon companies will also receive recognition in separate pregame ceremonies. Thank you, Minnesota Twins, for offering a remarkable opportunity for businesses and employers to receive recognition for their efforts in going beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness, connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Learn how to nominate a business or employer for outstanding hiring initiatives or support their employees who also serve by visiting beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, united to bring service members all the way home. Coming up next on Minnesota Military Radio, we'll examine the future of our VFW posts with the incoming state commander. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll examine the future of our VFW posts with the incoming state commander. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelledo.
This morning, I want to spend a few minutes recognizing mothers across Minnesota. These mothers might be veterans. They might be currently serving and in harm's way, or they might have suffered the loss of their son or daughter in service to our country. This is a time when the community comes together to acknowledge and thank mothers for their love, guidance, and nurturing. The influence of mothers has a tremendous impact on families and society overall. Whatever your situation, I want to thank you for the role you have played in the lives of our children and families across Minnesota. This Mother's Day, I encourage mothers to spend time teaching their children the importance of service and volunteerism to community, to those in need, and to our country. On behalf of everyone here at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the nearly 400,000 veterans across this great state, I wish you a fun and joyous day of celebration.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalado. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining us now is the incoming commander of the Minnesota Veterans of Foreign Wars, Lee Elfertz. Lee, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Lee, I understand you're a veteran of the United States Marines.
Yes, sir.
Can you tell us about your career in the military?
Very short. I enlisted in 1968, went through the basic training, and back then anyone that went into the military was pretty much considered cannon fodder. So after training, I was sent to Vietnam, and what do you do with a combat-trained infantryman when they're done with their tour? You send them home and say goodbye, and that was my career.
And I'll bet, unlike me, stationed at Cameron Bay in a nice, safe base surrounded by Army and Marine Corps.
We heard about you people.
You weren't there, were you?
No, sir.
You were out in the woods.
Yes, sir.
And how long was that tour?
The tour was for 13 months. But back in 1969, President Nixon started the first pullouts in August. So my actual time in Vietnam was about 7 months.
We got lucky on that one.
Yes, sir.
And shortly after that, came home and got out of the Marines and started your civilian career.
Yes, sir.
Now, Lee, somewhere along the line, I think it was a few years back, you were elected as post commander of Palmer Lake VFW?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell us when that was?
That would have been in 2001.
And you stayed in that position for a few years.
I couldn't find anybody else.
So we kept the Marine in there because he just kept putting his name in.
Yes, sir.
Now, I understand, and I think this is fascinating and good work, by the way, but I understand that the membership at Palmer Lake went from 292 members to 634 for those 6 or 7 years you were commander.
Yes, sir.
Now, Lee, I remember when I came back from Vietnam, I wandered into the Hopkins VFW, and the World War II guys signed me up, and it was all over. But they were always worried about, where are these Vietnam veterans? When are they going to join the veteran service organizations? And they talked about that for years. And, of course, today, I imagine you were talking about the same things. Where's today's veterans? Where's the veterans of the first Gulf War and the veterans of Afghanistan and Iraq? How did you manage to get more than double the membership at Palmer Lake in 6, 7 years?
As I became active within the organization, I really realized the importance of the mission of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. I realized the mission of our post within our community. When I belong to something, if I buy into it, I believe it's the best there is. And if it's the best there is for me, then certainly it's the best it is for everybody that's out there that's eligible. So it's just a matter of telling the people that I knew that were eligible that what we had and what they could expect and why it was important that they became a member. And at that time also, I was fortunate enough that we had the buildups that were happening in what went on in Iraq. And that made a lot more people eligible. And that was a big part of it also.
We're speaking with Lee Elfertz, who will be installed as the next commander of the state of Minnesota VFW in June on Minnesota Military Radio. Lee, as I was watching you answer that last question, I was envisioning members of the Palmer Lake VFW marching around marching them all around the parking lot.
Yes, sir.
You did?
No. VFW clubs have a culture. And they have a reputation that is somewhat deserved, cliquish. They're being dark, smoke-filled rooms. It's where old people sit around and tell war stories, and it's not something that's really conducive to bringing in younger members and even other members. One of the things that we were able to do at Palmer Lake was to change the culture of the post to make it relevant to the generation, to make it a friendly post, to welcome people that came in. And by doing that, everybody started to get a little excited, and now it wasn't just me doing membership, it was other post members doing it also, and we continue on that mission.
So you changed the culture a little bit. You're still doing community service work. You're still doing bringing in people and doing great things.
Yes, sir. We're still signing up people that just walk in the door. Right now, as of today, we have 707 members.
Still growing. You're doing a great job out there.
We are, yes.
Now, Lee, some years ago, you must have decided to move up through the ranks of the state of Minnesota VFW. How did your wife must be a saint. How did she allow you to do that?
or she wanted to get rid of me one way.
One or the other.
Actually, there was kind of a leadership vacuum within our district, and I had no aspirations of going any further. But given that fact, I was encouraged by a number of people that I really respected that I needed to move up in the organization. So I went through the district chairs. I became district commander. And from there, I kind of got the bug to do something even bigger and better. And at that point, I did run for state office, and this is the result.
So you spent the last year as the senior vice commander?
Actually, it's a four-step process at the department level. You are elected as judge advocate. Then the next year, you move up to junior vice commander. The year after, it's senior vice commander. And then the year after that, it is commander.
Well, Lee, we've got to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about your thoughts as incoming state commander and what the future of the VFW posts are in Minnesota. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. I've been joined today by Lee Alfords, the incoming state commander of the Minnesota VFW. Lee, we've been talking about your experience as a Marine and the great things that have happened at Palmer Lake with you and all of the veterans over there that are members. And now, in June, you take over as the state commander of Minnesota's Veterans of Foreign Wars.
Yes, sir.
What are your expectations? What are your plans? Are you going to make a lot of changes? What is the state of Veterans of Foreign Wars posts in Minnesota?
There's no question it's a challenging time. It's a challenging time from two facets. Number one, we do have a declining pool of eligible veterans. We have veterans from World War II, Korea, and now even Vietnam that are dying at an alarming rate. And if you look at the people that are actually eligible out of our current conflicts, it numbers less than 1 million people. There were 14 million plus people that were eligible for our organization in World War II. There were some 6 million eligible out of Korea, 3.5 million eligible out of Vietnam. So as that pool of eligible veterans shrinks, what we have to do is become a relevant organization for them. We have to be a kind of an organization that they want to join, they want to be a part of, something that they can buy into.
Lee, as you mentioned in an earlier segment, and a lot of people think the veteran service posts, the VFW, Legion, so forth, place for veterans to get together and tell stories and have an adult beverage. What's the real mission of the VFW in Minnesota?
It's quite the opposite. There are 246 posts in the state of Minnesota. Of that, less than half actually have a club home. The rest of them meet in community centers, in town halls, and in city centers, anywhere but a VFW hall. Their mission is dual-fold, really. First, we concentrate on veterans affairs. How do we help the veteran that is currently serving and their family? That's really a big part of what we're about. The second part is community service. We have such a broad-based community service organization that really we're the best-kept secret in town. Last year in the state of Minnesota, our posts and their auxiliary members donated over $3 million in time and money within their communities. They donated 1.5 million hours in doing anything from shoveling sidewalks to Meals on Wheels, to visiting veterans in hospitals, to visiting other people in hospitals. It's just incredible the service that we have in our own communities.
We're speaking with Lee Alfords, the incoming commander of the Minnesota's VFW. Lee, we've had the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on many times, and as he said, there's almost 400,000 veterans in Minnesota. A lot of them have issues. A lot of them don't know that there's a county veteran service officer in every county, but most of them know where the veteran service organizations are. Do you help them find the right resources to help them solve problems?
Absolutely, and that's an excellent question. What most people are unaware of the congressionally chartered veteran service organizations, virtually every one of them has their own veteran service officer. Those veteran service officers are meant to ease the trauma, if you will, that it takes in dealing with the Veterans Administration. Once a veteran comes in with a problem and we refer them to one of our own veteran service officers, they will get what is called a power of attorney to deal with the VA based on that veteran's needs. So what that veteran does is turns it over to the service officer, and they deal with the VA instead of the veteran having to do it themselves.
Now, Lee, and one of the other things that we don't talk about or think about a lot is there's VFWs all over the state, as you've mentioned, and all over the country. Kind of a powerful force when in dealing with the state legislatures and the Congress.
Very much so. And that is a key part of why it's so important to be a member of our organization. I've been to Washington lobbying for the last 10 years. I go every spring. One of the first questions we're asked when we walk into a representative's office, how many do you represent? The implication is very simple. How many votes can you deliver? Every time we sign up a member, that makes us that much stronger in our voice in Washington.
Lee, we just got about a minute left. Are there things you want to accomplish in your year in office? What's on your agenda?
Hopefully we can make, as I said, the VFW relevant to our younger veterans. They're a different group of people. They're very, very concerned about what they do. Their volunteering in time is relevant within their community. They do not interact the way our former veterans did. They are socially conscious in the social media, and we have to find a way to connect with them and make them feel important, make them feel that their membership is necessary and important within our organization.
And Lee, if our veterans or our listeners want to contact you, where do they go?
They go to our state website, which is vfw.state.us, and they will find us. And any questions they have, we can answer them.
Two ways for listeners to do that. The website, once again, is vfw.state.mn.us, or you can go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Lee, final thoughts? We're about out of time.
We're out looking for you. If you're a veteran, we'll find you. We want you. We need you. And you're welcome in our organization.
Lee, good luck this year, and thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
That was Lee Elfertz, the incoming state commander for the Minnesota VFW. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Luke Heikkila and Lee Elfert, Commissioner Larry Shalado, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about how our communities of faith are easing deployment hardships, and we'll hear the inspiring story of one of Minnesota's most well-known veterans. That's next Sunday morning at 7 or online anytime at minnesotamilitaryradio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, minnesotamilitaryradio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, beyondtheyellowribbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at minnesotamilitaryradio.com.